Again, friends, I'm glad you could join me for another enjoyable trip down memory lane as we revisit the Gold Age Radio. I'm Corey Walker, your host. Thanks for joining me, and I invite you to gather again around the old part of radio. I forgot to mention during last week's program that old part of radio is now 11 years old. Thanks to everybody for your continued listenership. Today I'm featuring a couple of classic westerns as I felt it was time we explore that genre again. First up, let's enjoy an episode from the short-lived series The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett, the title character, described as, quote, a slow-talking, easy-loving gentleman, but dangerous when pushed into a gunfight. The series ran for just under a year, from September 20, 1953, until June 24, 1954, all on NBC. Although Stewart's acting was stellar, as always, the series came near the end of radio's golden age and lacked the caliber of such Western greats as Gunsmoke, with both of these factors contributing to the series' early end. Today's episode was first heard at 8 p.m. on Sunday, February 7, 1954, and is titled Apron Face Sorrel. Happy listening.
In a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Later this evening, listen to the NBC Star Playhouse with one of your favorite stars. Hear Meet the Press, America's number one newsmaking program. And be sure to keep tuned for the dramatic story of communism in America on Last Man Out. It's a wonderful lineup of great programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
The 2 p.m. from Chicago wasn't more than, about 45 minutes late. That was practically a record for this time of year, what with the spring floods and all. Of course, later on in the summer, when things had dried up, it was more than likely the train had hit Russellville right on schedule. Once in a while, anyway. I climbed down from the buckboard Paul Poindexter had lent me and walked over to the platform. I guess I'd be able to recognize Clay Fenton, even though I'd never seen him before. It stood to reason that there wouldn't be more than one 16-year-old boy getting off at Russellville Station, and Clay's mother had sent along a pretty complete description. He 5'7", thin, gangly, sandy hair, and a V-shaped scar on his forehead. The train had stopped now, and the conductor lowered some iron steps. The first person to step down was a drummer, holding a big tapestry valise crammed full of samples. Behind him, there were two ladies. They didn't have any suitcases, just boxes, so I figured they'd only been as far as Fort Davidson on a shopping spree. After them, there didn't seem to be anybody else at all. Well, now I'm sure that letter had said Clay would be arriving on the 22nd. Mister.
Yep?
This is the Tuesday train, isn't it?
What day do you think it was?
Oh, I know it's Tuesday, but sometimes, you know, I was wondering if this could be Monday's train. I mean, you're not a day late, are you?
Well, of course we're not a day late. We're right on time, practically.
Uh-huh. Well, I was supposed to meet a young fellow traveling with you, about 16.
Mr. Ponsett?
Clay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I didn't see you get off.
I was riding in the last car. It took me a couple of minutes to get my things together.
Oh, okay. This the fellow you were looking for, mister?
That's right. Thanks very much.
Book!
Wow, buckboard's right over here, Clay. Here, let me give you a hand of that suitcase.
Oh, it's not very heavy. I can manage.
Have a good trip.
Yes, sir, just fine.
Here, you put your bag right behind the seat here.
Okay.
You want to drive?
Huh?
Fine. Well, you can handle a buckboard, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah, well, Annie's real gentle. No sense being scared of her.
I'm not scared, Mr. Ponson.
All right.
I'm not scared of anything.
All right, Clay.
It's just that I don't know the way to the ranch, so maybe you'd better...
Yeah. I didn't think of that. Well, come on, hop aboard. All right, you all settled?
Yes, sir.
All right, Annie, come on. Let's go. Come on, man. That's your first trip west, isn't it, Clay?
That's right.
Yeah. Come on, man. Come on now. You know, you must have done some pretty smooth talking to persuade your ma to let you come out here all by yourself.
My coming was her idea, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, I see.
Well, she thought, well, since I don't have any brothers and we've always lived in town, she thought maybe it would do me good to spend a summer on a ranch.
I see.
Of course, I was all for it, too.
You were, huh?
Oh, sure. Especially when I found out I was going to be staying with you. The other fellows, they sure were jealous when I told them I was going to be living with a six-shooter.
Well, we all pick up nicknames out here, Clay. Something to answer to besides your own handle. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know.
In your case, it means something, all right.
No.
Oh, Mom told me not to expect you to talk very much, especially about yourself. Yeah, I guess she knows you pretty well, Mr. Ponsett.
We used to be real good friends, your Ma and Pa and me. That was when they lived up in Dakota, before you were born.
Yes, sir.
Come to think of it, you look like your pa.
Well, that's what people say, but I don't remember him. Funny, the only thing I can remember is sitting on his lap and playing with his watch chain. I remember that watch chain just as clear as day, but I just can't remember him. Wonder why that is.
Oh, some things just stick with a person, I guess.
Yeah. Is it a big ranch, Mr. Ponsett, where we're going?
No, it's not really. Mr. Poindexter, he's the owner. Oh, he's got 500 head of cattle and a couple thousand acres, that's all.
It sounds pretty big to me.
That's all what you're used to, I reckon.
Yes, sir. It sure was nice of Mr. Poindexter to let me move in with you.
Oh, he was real pleased at the prospect of having an extra hand for the summer. There sure has been more than enough work for the three of us already.
You mean there's only three people on the ranch?
Well, there's four now, counting you.
Oh, I thought there'd be a whole lot more than that. I thought there'd be 10 or 15 cowboys and a cook and some men to look after the horses and...
Well, Saul Poindexter, he does the cooking himself, and Jeff takes care of the horses.
Jeff?
That's Mr. Poindexter's son. Yeah, he must be about your age, Clay. Maybe a year or two older. Not as tall, though.
Oh.
Jeff will show you the ropes. He knows all about ranching.
Oh?
Oh, I expect there's plenty of things you can show him, too, about city life, I mean.
Yes, sir. I expect so.
Yeah, you'll probably have a real good time getting acquainted. Well, here's where we turn off. Easy, Annie. Easy now.
Well, I didn't expect you back so soon, Brad.
Yeah. Train was earlier than usual. Clay, that's Mr. Poindexter here.
How do you do, sir?
Pleased to meet you, son. Well, come on. Jump down here so I can get a look at you.
Yes, sir.
Let's see here now. Not much meat on your bones. But we'll soon take care of that.
That's the bunkhouse over there, Clay. You can start getting settled while I unhitch Annie here.
All right, Mr. Ponsett.
No. Hold on a minute, Brady.
What?
Well, there's no reason why Clay can't unhitch the buckboard. This is as good a time as any for him to start learning his chores.
Oh, whatever you say, Saul. Think you can manage Clay?
I guess so.
Jeff will give you a hand. Jeff! Jeff! Where in thunder are you?
In the barn, Paul.
Well, get out here.
I'm fixing that dryer you busted yesterday.
I don't care what you're doing. I say get out here. You think I'm hollering just to exercise my lungs?
Okay, keep your shirt on.
Fine way for a son to talk to his father. Just see that you don't follow his example, Clay.
No, sir, I won't.
Yeah, well, what's all the ruckus about? Oh, hi, Britt.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's Clay Fenton, Jeff.
Howdy. Hello.
I want you to help Clay unhitch the buckboard.
In those duds?
I've got some other clothes in my suitcase.
Like mine?
Well, not exactly.
Appears like we'll have to take Clay into town and fix him up with some Levi's and boots.
Yeah, maybe we'd better.
Well, if you don't mind getting them fancy pants all messed up.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Come on in. Easy.
Clay, I'll put your suitcase in the bunkhouse.
Thanks, Mr. Ponson.
Yeah. Seems like kind of the quiet type, Rick.
Well, this is all pretty new to him, Saul.
Yeah, well, he get used to it. Jeff will see to that.
Yeah, I guess
he will. Well, I better start fixing supper. I thought maybe we'd have Johnny Cake tonight. How's that sound to you?
Sounds fine. Sounds fine, Saul. Well, I took Clay's things into the bunkhouse and emptied out part of a wooden footlocker so he'd have some storage space. Saul and Jeff lived up in the main house. There was room up there for me, too, but I always felt more comfortable in the bunkhouse. And besides the way Saul snored, holy smokes. You could hear it all the way down here when the wind was right. I thought about unpacking Clay's suitcase, but then I decided maybe he'd rather do it himself. Saul was right. Clay sure was a quiet type. A lot more like his mother and his father. Ted Fenton had been about as lively as they come. He's always laughing and cracking jokes. I never could figure out why he sold that general store and moved back to East, but I suppose he had his reasons. Funny how a boy can grow up and be so different from his pa. A couple minutes later, I heard Jeff shout about something.
All right, then prove it. Prove that he ain't no dude. All right, I will. Yeah, you're scared
to ride. I couldn't quite make out what Clay called back, but I sure could tell they weren't exactly hitting it off. Well, I didn't actually blame Jeff for not taking the Clay. Of course, in the city, it had been Jeff who had done the misfit, but we weren't in the city now. Anyhow, I waited for Clay to come back into the bunkhouse, and when he didn't show up, I walked outside to see what had happened to him. He wasn't in sight, but there was something going on out in the corral behind the barn.
Riding, cowboy.
I got there just in time to see the apron-faced sorrel give a buck that sent young Clay flying clear over the corral fence. For a second, he didn't get up, either.
Britt, you see that?
Clay, hey, you all right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure he's all right.
Well, what the Sam Hill are you trying to do?
He said I was a dude, that I couldn't stay in the saddle.
You put him up to riding that sorrel, Jeff?
Nope, I gave him his pick of the ponies.
Now, you know that sorrel's a high binder. You should have warned him.
It ain't my fault if he can't tell a spooky horse when he sees one. It was his pick.
Here, Clay, you think you can stand up?
Yes, sir, I think so.
Let's see. Well, doesn't seem to be anything broken.
I guess I better change my trousers. They're all ripped up.
You got nobody but yourself to blame, kid. I told you didn't know the first thing about riding a pony. You should have fessed up to it instead of making such a fool of yourself.
I'll show you, Jeff. I'll show you I can ride. And I'll ride that sorrel, too. Just you wait and see.
You'd almost think he meant it, wouldn't you, Britt?
He means it.
City dude. He don't even know which side to mount.
Yeah. But that won't keep him from trying the sorrel again.
Well, if he does, he'll just get himself tossed off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe so.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment. Until recent years, misconceptions prompted a lot of people to feel that a diagnosis of heart disease was a death sentence. But today, thanks to medical science and the educational work of your Heart Association, we are learning that most people with heart disease can work and lead happy lives. This Valentine's Day is Heart Sunday. Remember to give to your local Heart Association because when you help your heart fund, you help your heart. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, Clay changed his clothes and we all had supper. Nobody said much while we were eating and nobody mentioned the sorrel again. I figured it was just as well to let the subject drop for the time being. And as soon as the dishes were washed, Clay and I headed for the bunkhouse. It was only 7:30, and that was half an hour before my usual bedtime, but Clay seemed pretty tired, so we turned in. I guess I must have been kind of tired myself, huh? Anyway, the first thing I knew, I dropped off. Getting on toward dawn when I... one of the horses down the corral was sure upset about something. I turned over and I saw that Clay's bunk was empty. Clothes were gone, too. For a second, I wondered if he'd run off. Maybe he tried to go home. Then I heard him coming into the bunkhouse. His face was all wet and shiny, like he'd been working up a sweat, and there were some dark stains on his pants and shirt. And he undressed and he put the clothes he'd been wearing in his suitcase. And then he crawled under the blanket on his cot and he pretended to go back to sleep. He hadn't noticed that I was awake, and I didn't see any reason for starting a conversation at 4:00 in the morning, so... Besides, whatever he'd been up to... Probably wasn't any of my business anyway. Must have been a good hour later. I woke up again. I was doused my face in a bowl of cold water and washed the sleep away. Clay drug himself out of bed and started to put on some trousers. I noticed they weren't the same ones he'd worn when he went out during the night. I didn't get a chance to say anything about it. Just then, Saul Poindexter came charging into the bunkhouse like a bull after a red shirt. Ah, good morning, Saul.
Hey, Clay, I want to talk to you.
Why, yes, sir.
What's the matter, Saul?
I just been down to the corral. That apron-faced sorrel's been whipped half to death.
What?
His flanks are cut to shreds. So I wonder he can even stand up.
Well, now, maybe he got caught in some barbed wire.
I found the bullwhip beside the fence. It's caked up with blood.
Well, do you know anything about this, Clay?
No. No, sir, not a thing.
You're lying, you little...
Now, Saul.
Jeff told me about how the sorrel threw Clay yesterday. You knew about it, Britt. You were there.
Yeah, I was there.
Well?
I didn't do it, Mr. Ponsett.
If you didn't, who did? Me or Jeff or Britt?
I don't know.
Well, maybe if you were whipped the way that pony was, maybe then you'd tell the truth, you little...
Now, easy, Saul. Easy now.
Get him out of here, Britt. Send him back home. Send him anywhere. But get him off my ranch.
You didn't whip that pony, Clay?
I told you I didn't.
Yeah, that's what you told me.
Why don't you believe me then? Just because I'm a stranger, because I'm different from the rest of you, why do you have to pick on me?
Well, there's one way to find out whether you're telling the truth or not.
What do you mean?
You said you'd ride that sorrel again. You said you'd show Jeff that you could ride him, huh?
No, I would, too, if they'd let me.
Well, I'll let you.
Huh?
But I sure hope for your sake you didn't whip that horse last night.
What difference would it make?
Well, horses are pretty smart animals. And when somebody's mean to them, they don't forget it. And they can be mean, too.
That Sorrel especially.
Oh?
The person who beat him ever tried to climb on that pony's back, well, then... But as long as you weren't the one, well, you haven't got anything to worry about, have you? Come on now. Let's go out the corral, huh? I told Jeff to saddle up the Sorrel and bring him into the yard, and Clay stood beside me, his eyes pushed wide open, staring at that stable door. He didn't move a muscle until Jeff led the pony toward us. I could see the cuts on the animal's flanks, and he walked with a sore, unsteady gait. About 6 feet away, he stopped and flared his nostrils, and a little shiver jarred Clay's body. Then the Sorrel let out a snort and reared. Clay caught his breath, and the pony sprang forward, almost tearing the reins out of Jeff's hands.
No!
Clay darted out of the way as fast as his legs could carry him. He ducked under the fence and kept running.
Claire, you satisfied, Britt? You believe he done it?
Well, I was pretty certain of it all along, so...
Well, then why'd we have to go through all this rigmarole?
At least he won't have any reason to go on lying from now on. That's something.
Yeah.
I sure wish I could figure out what got into him last night.
He's mean. That's what got into him. Mean, clean through.
Well, kids aren't usually mean to animals, so...
Your friend Clay Fenton is. Take another look at my pony there, if there's any doubt in your mind.
Well, we had breakfast, Saul and Jeff and me. Then we did the morning chores. I hoped that Clay would come back of his own accord and face up to what he'd done, but by 10 o'clock, it looked like somebody'd have to go after him, so I saddled up Scar and started off. It wasn't very hard to follow Clay's tracks across the prairie, and about 30 minutes later, I caught up with him. He'd stopped to rest in the shade of a chalk boulder, and he'd been too tired to stay awake. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. Whoa, boy. Easy. Clay? Come on. Come on, Clay.
Huh? Oh.
Yeah. All right. You ready to get back to the ranch?
I can't.
Well, you'll have to come back sooner or later, even if you don't stay, even if it's just to get your things.
They know it was me that whipped that pony, don't they? When I ran off, that cinched it.
Yeah, that cinched it.
I had to whip him, Mr. Ponsett. I had to.
You did, huh?
I didn't know it would make him meaner. I thought if I beat him good, he'd be scared of me afterwards, and he'd let me ride him. I thought he'd be scared of me the way I was scared of him.
You don't know much about horses, do you, son?
I know plenty. That's why I hate them.
Oh?
It was a horse that killed my pa.
Oh, I see.
We were visiting my Uncle Jack out in the country, and pa was taking me for a horseback ride. I wasn't more than 3 years old, but he wanted me to get used to riding. And the horse threw us. Mom was watching from the front porch. She let out a scream. I told you it was funny what you remember from the time when you were a kid.
Yeah?
Well, I remember hearing Mom scream. I guess maybe it was the first time I ever heard her sound frightened. I guess that's why I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, afterwards... After that day, I had this mark on my forehead. I must have hit against a rock. And Pa... Well, Pa was dead. I've been scared of horses ever since. I've always hated them.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of times folks hate what they're afraid of.
That's why Mom made me come out to this ranch. I didn't want to, but she made me. She said I had to get a hold of myself and start acting like a man. And I tried, Mr. Ponsett. I tried to ride that Sorrel yesterday. You know I tried.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
I couldn't hang on, well, I figured if I showed him who was boss, I figured then maybe he wouldn't throw me again.
Now, whipping that pony the way you did, you could have killed him, Clay.
Well, what's the difference? He's just a horse, ain't he?
Uh-huh. Well, if you can't see where it was wrong, there's no point in me standing here jawing about it. So let's just... Clay...
Yes, sir.
No, don't move. No matter what happens, just don't move.
What?
Now do what I say. Just keep sitting the way you are.
What's the matter?
There's a rattlesnake edging toward your belly. Now go on. Go on. Keep on talking. Just keep on talking like nothing's the matter. Don't try to look at him. Just go on talking.
I can't.
No, there's no reason to get scared yet. Now, he may shove off by. We buy you and never know. Just keep on talking. Keep on talking now.
I can feel him on my leg.
Oh, you're imagining that, Clay. He's not even touching you.
Can't you kill him, Mr. Bunsen?
If he starts to strike, maybe I can get off a shot. But he isn't striking yet. Now, sometimes rattlers go on about their business and don't strike. Now, so you just keep sitting there. Just keep sitting there and keep talking like everything was fine. Go on, son. Now, go on. Talk. Go on. Clay did his best, but his voice sure didn't sound very strong or confident. Not that I blamed him. He was in a tough spot. And the worst of it was I just couldn't risk shooting. The snake was right between us. As long as he stayed there firing at me, I'd be sure to get a bullet into Clay. The rattler would just move off a foot or so, maybe. He was getting nervous now. The tip of his tail jiggled the rattles back and forth. I inched my gun out of the holster, but I still couldn't fire. And the snake started to coil, and the rattle sounded even louder. And his head swung up, and his beady eyes seemed to pop out, and he was less than a foot away from Clay's arm, and he was ready to strike if Clay had just so much as twitched. For a second, that rattler just hung in midair. And then he twisted and he whipped toward Scar. And Scar reared, got out of the way. I could get off a shot now, but I didn't have to. Scar's hooves were saving me the trouble. They came down again and again and again until the rattler's body was half buried in the ground. And then Scar backed off, and the snake gave a flip of his tail, but the rattlers were broken. And there wasn't any sound. All right, Clay. Let's go.
Mr. Ponsett?
Yeah?
Why'd he do it?
What?
Your horse. Why'd he save my life?
I guess he just doesn't like rattlesnakes, that's all.
The snake wasn't bothering him. He was out of the way. What's his name, Mr. Ponce?
Scar.
Scar?
That's right.
That's funny. I guess if I was a horse, that'd be my name.
Well,
I'd like to ask you a favor, Mr. Ponce.
Go ahead.
Do you think that sometime, if I stay on here this summer, I mean, well, sometime, could I ride him?
Well, if we're going to get back in time for dinner, we're going to both have to ride him right now. Here, come on, I'll heist you up. Come on, here. It wasn't easy for Clay. The next few weeks, especially since Saul Poindexter said if Clay was going to stay on, he'd have to look after that sorrel. Pretty smart old man, so. Took time, lots of time. Lots of time before that pony even let Clay come near him. But before long, the two of them were galloping all over the ranch from early morning till past supper. I guess maybe that apron-faced sorrel forgot the whipping Clay had given him. But I don't think Clay forgot it.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Bill Johnstone, Burt Holland, and Sam Edwards, who played the part of Clay Fenton. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. By the way, you'll be interested in knowing that The Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking. Tonight, enjoy Sunday at Home with Jan Murray on the NBC Radio Network.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. You just heard Jimmy Stewart in The Six Shooter, a short-lived Western series, which remains a favorite of CFIS volunteer Maurice. The episode was titled Apron Face Sorrel and was first heard on Sunday, February 7, 1954, on NBC. Next, I'm going to feature premier Western series Gunsmoke, which ran on CBS Radio, running from April 26, 1952 until June 18, 1961. Featuring grit and realism never before heard in a radio Western series, Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad as Matt Dillon, went on to become a huge hit. Today's episode is titled Ben Tolliver's Stud and was first heard at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, February 7, 1954. Good listening.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal, the first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
I sure do hope things... Mr. Dillon, are you listening to this?
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead, Chester.
And I sure do hope things has been good with you like they has been with me. Take care of yourself. Maybe I will come up to see you one day soon, your loving brother, Magnus. And down here at the bottom of the paper, he says, your Uncle Will got tromped on by a cow last week. Well, now, ain't that nice, Mr. Dillon?
What do you mean, about Uncle Will?
No, I mean getting this letter from Magnus. It's real thoughty of him.
Well, it's the first one I remember you getting.
It's the first one he's wrote, to me at least. It sure is funny, though. I never knew that boy could ride a lick.
Oh, maybe he's learned since you saw him last.
No, I don't think so, because Magnus don't hold with schooling.
No?
No, sir, none of my kinfolks does. Well, my ma always said that all a body needs to know is how to cook, care for your own, and get to the church.
Well, she must have made your pa a very good wife.
Well, I don't know as he ever said. He run off when I was only four. Him and me never talked to each other much.
You the marshal, mister?
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
I'm Nancy Creed.
Well, come in, won't you? This is Chester Proudfoot, Miss Creed.
How you do, Miss Creed?
Marshal, I come to see you because my pa's going to shoot somebody dead.
What?
And I want you should stop him.
Well, who's your pa going to shoot, Nancy?
Fellow that worked for him for a spell. Name of Ben Tolliver.
Well, why's your pa after him?
Ben ran off last night and took one of pa's studs. Pa says he is just about the best stud pa ever saw.
Well, where do you and your pa live, Nancy?
About 20 miles from here, out along the Arkansas.
And you think this man, this Ben Tolliver, came into Dodge?
I don't just think it, Marshal. I know it. And so does Pa. Ben always said he was coming here.
I see.
So I sneaked away this morning after Pa went down to the corral to come tell you. I figured you'd be the feller to see. Being the marshal and all.
Well, look, Nancy, if this man stole one of your pa's horses, why doesn't your pa come in here and tell me? He could swear out a warrant for Tolliver and then I could arrest him.
Pa don't want to. He says he'll take care of his own troubles. You think you can stop Pa from shooting Ben?
Well, I can sure try, Nancy. Tell me, what does your Pa look like?
Look like?
Well, you see, I don't know your Pa, but if I knew what he looked like, I could watch for him, you see?
I never thought about Pa as looking like anything, except just Pa. He's kind of gray. But then he's always looked like that.
Well, anything else?
He's got a bad leg from where a horse kicked him. And his jaw is busted some.
Well, that don't sound like he should be hard to find. Not with a limp and a lopsided face. My gracious, even I could find a man with a limp and a lopsided face.
All right, Chester. Look, Nancy, I'll watch for your Pa, and if he does come into Dodge, I'll have a talk with him, huh?
You do that, and I'll surely thank you, Marshal. Say, Marshal.
Yes, ma'am.
If it helps any, I know where that Ben Tolliver is at.
You do?
Right there at the Long Branch Saloon, having a beer. You know where I mean?
Yeah.
I seen his horse tied outside. So I went up and looked through the window. He's there, right enough.
Nancy, why didn't you tell me this before?
I never thought of it. Well, you'll do something about Pa now, won't you, Marshal?
I declare she don't know get up from hole, does she, Mr. John? She's kindly pretty, but gosling chin and slack jaw.
Come on, Chester. Let's go have a talk with Ben Tolliver and find out what this is all about.
When United States military personnel arrive at an overseas station, one of the first problems they encounter in human relations is the language barrier. The people there make a strong effort to learn our language. They know it will benefit their economy. But you don't have to learn their language. In fact, you might complete your tour of duty satisfactorily without any appreciable knowledge of it. But you'll miss a lot. And you don't have to miss anything. For as a member of the Armed Forces of the United States, you have the opportunity to enroll in a USAFI spoken language course. The language series includes courses in 24 foreign tongues. They are practical, conversational studies with primary emphasis on spoken usage. Inquire about a language course from your education officer. Join a group class. And when you've mastered the vocabulary, watch the faces light up as you greet people in their native tongue. It's one more version of Power Through Knowledge with USAFI.
Me to come into Long Branch with you, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester, but stay by the door while I talk to Tolliver.
Mm-hmm. But how are you going to know which one is him?
There won't be more than three or four people in there this time of day.
You reckon that's him sitting at the table over there?
Yeah, it could be. Hello. Your name Ben Tolliver?
That's right.
My name's Dillon. I'm the marshal here in Dodge. You mind if I sit down?
Please yourself.
Thank you. A girl named Nancy Krieg came into my office a little while ago.
What'd she want?
She says her Pa is looking for you.
No?
Yeah, he claims you stole one of his horses. Is that right?
He owed me 4 months' wages and he wouldn't pay me.
Trouble. You think you can stop Pa from shooting Ben?
Well, I can sure try to somebody else, no matter what you figure.
Look, mister, I caught him when he was running wild out on the range. I brought him into old Creed's place and broke him myself. I put 3 months' work into that stud, and on my own time of an evening.
Creed says it was his horse and that you stole him.
Yeah, no such thing. Besides, he said he'd pay me $30 a month, then he threw me out without a penny.
Well, come on, sir.
Come on where?
I'm going to take you to jail.
Jail? What are you putting me in jail for?
If what Nancy says is true, Creed is coming into town to shoot you. Putting you in jail is the best way I know to stop a fight.
But I ain't done nothing wrong, Marshal.
You'll only be in jail till this thing gets straightened out. Now, later this afternoon, I'll ride out and have a talk with Creed. before he decides to come into town.
It's hot out here, ain't it? Well, ain't a speck of shade for miles around.
Well, if he's breaking wild horses out here, he doesn't have time to worry about the heat. Well, we better leave our horses here, Chester.
All right,
you. Don't be banging on the door. I seen you coming.
You Jake Creed?
That's right.
I want to talk to you, Creed.
Who are you, mister?
Marshal Dillon from Dodge.
I'll come out.
What is it you want?
I want to know about Ben Tolliver.
That fool Nancy run to Dodge and told you.
That's right.
Well, since she did, I won't try to fool you. That boy stole a horse of mine. I figure in a couple of days I'll go after him. Find him, shoot him.
Now, look, Creed, you just can't shoot a man down, you know.
Why not? He stole a horse, so I got cause to shoot him.
Oh, now, listen to me, Creed.
I don't have to listen to nobody. Being a marshal, you're all filled up with laws. But I ain't got time to mess with that, no. I'll just shoot him.
Creed, either you come into Dodge and swear out a complaint against Tolliver, or you forget about the whole thing.
I got better than 40 range horses out here, only half broke. I can't be wasting time fooling around with no trial.
Did you owe the boy money?
Of course not. Everything he did, I had to show him how. The way I see it, he should have paid me.
He worked out here for you for 4 months, didn't he?
You could say that.
Well, he told me that stud horse was his.
Well, since he caught him and broke him, I guess he'd figure it that way. But Ben was working at my place and taking my food. That stud's mine.
The law might not agree with you, Creed.
That's just why I'm going to handle my own trouble and not mess around with the law.
Look, I've tried to tell you, Creed, and I'm going to tell you once more real plain. You shoot that boy and you'll hang for it. I don't care what you think the right of it is. All right, come on, Chester.
And maybe I won't shoot it. Maybe I'll fix that boy good some other way. Him and that stud horse he's so proud of.
That miserable old buffalo's as mean as an acre of snakes, ain't
he? Yeah.
What are you going to do, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I can't keep Ben Tolliver in jail forever.
No, sir.
I just have to turn him loose in the morning and hope they don't run into each other. You're free now, Ben.
Thanks, Marshal. Being in jail overnight makes a fella kind of ouchy.
I'm sorry about that. I did it to save trouble.
Oh, I know, Marshal. I don't blame you none.
What you gonna do now, Ben?
Well, Chester, I thought maybe I could find myself a job of work somewhere.
Oh, what kind of work?
All I know is horses. There ought to be some spread near here that could use a hand.
Well, if there is anybody looking for a hired hand, Sam over at the Long Branch would know about it.
I'll tell you what, Ben. I'll walk down with you if you like.
Well, thanks, Marshal.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
You could just have a beer while you're down there talking, couldn't you?
Yeah. Say, Chester, why don't you come along with us, huh?
Well, thank you. Say, that's a good idea, Mr. Dillon, and I'm glad you thought of it.
Well, thank you, Chester. Where are you from, Ben?
California.
California?
What are you doing in Kansas?
This is the cow country, Marshal. California just don't have the spreads.
Yeah, but all that gold out there.
The gold rush was 20 years ago, Chester.
Well, I know that. But there might just be a little dab of it left laying around.
I sure didn't find any, Chester.
Maybe you didn't know where to look. Well, I don't see Sam nowhere.
No.
Oh, Matt.
Hello, Chester.
Oh, hello, Kitty. Kitty, it's Ben Tolliver.
Oh, hi, man.
We came down to talk to Sam.
And have some beer.
Well, I can get you the beer, Chester, but Sam's down at the depot with a wagon.
Oh, I see. You're up kind of early, aren't you?
Oh, I can sleep this afternoon. Come over to the bar. I'll get you a beer.
Okay.
Hi, you make a pretty fancy bartender, Miss Kitty.
Well, girl's got to have an ace up her sleeve, Chester.
What?
Never mind, Chester.
Well, I know.
What are you two doing in the saloon this early?
Well, Ben here is looking for a job.
What sort of job, Ben?
On the ranch somewhere, Miss Kitty.
You work around stock much?
All my life, just about.
Yeah, he was working for Jake Creed up until yesterday.
Jake Creed?
Yeah. Well, do you know him?
I know about him. Only a few months back, some cowboy was giving me half a dozen reasons why you ought to kill him.
Yeah, he must have been the fellow Jake threw out just before I come along.
You probably stayed with him about 3-4 months, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Then he started some argument, you had a fight, and he threw you out, huh?
That's about the right of it.
And no pay in the bargain. I swear, I don't know how Creed gets away with it.
Well, I guess there's always somebody new drifting by who doesn't know his reputation.
What'd you argue about, Ben?
Oh, a little bit of everything, Miss Kitty. But mostly on how to rope.
How to rope?
Yeah, Creed says when you work in stock, the only way is to tie hard and fast, and I dally.
Oh, I sure couldn't argue that.
Kitty, you see, hard and fast means that you tie the end of your rope to the saddle horn.
And when you dally, you just hold the end of the rope in your hand and twist it around the horn a couple of times.
That's right.
That way, if the rope gets tangled up in your mount's legs or yours, you let go and you're free. There ain't no way to get dragged if you dally. Of course, most fellows don't think it amounts to much, but some do in California.
Well, they sure don't in Texas.
Well, I'm glad I make a living in here.
It sounds complicated, I guess, Miss Kitty, but it ain't to a horseman.
Well, no matter what the argument was about, he should have paid you, Ben.
Say, Ben, have you got any money at all?
No, sir.
Look, here, I'll give you $5, and then, well, you can pay me back when you make it, huh? Well,
thanks, Marshal.
As long as you've got your money out, Marshal, don't forget the beer.
Yeah. There you are, Kitty.
Thank you.
Marshal, I think maybe I'd better go down and have a look at my horse. Make sure he's been watered this morning.
Say, could I go with you? I'd like to see your horse.
Oh, sure.
Ben, you come back later this afternoon. Sam will be here, and we can talk about a job for you.
Thank you, Miss Kitty.
He seems like a nice young fellow, man.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Oh, just thinking about Jake Creed.
What about him?
He's got something on his mind, Kitty. He'll try to get even with Ben Tolliver some way.
Pardon me, sir. What's the matter?
I'm going to be a father.
Well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Not the ninth time, it isn't.
Well, just think. Because you're a serviceman, your wife is under the Dependents Medical Care Program. That means complete maternity and infant care. Why, you'll practically have the baby for nothing.
It's not having that bothers me. It's the rest.
The rest?
Yeah, I don't get any. They're always crying and yelling and playing, wanting a drink of water in the middle of the night. And there's the food bills and the clothing bills.
For more about Medicare, get the pamphlet Dependence Medical Care Program.
And baby oil and pablum and 3 o'clock feedings and burping and walking.
Worst thing I ever seen.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
Mr. Dillon, he's gone.
What? Who's gone?
Ben Tolliver. He took a horse from Moss Grimmick's and he's headed out for the Creed place. He says he's going to kill him.
Well, what for? What's this all about?
Well, this morning I was having a cup of coffee with Ben over at the Long Branch, and I walked down to the stable with him to kind of keep him company-like whilst he fed. And,
yeah.
And that's when we saw it. Oh, that poor old stud. He was...
Saw what, Chester?
Well, Moss told us he'd seen old man Creed out and back to the corral, but he didn't think too much
Chester,
of it.
Chester, will you tell me what happened?
That mean old devil hamstrung Ben Stud, Mr. Dillon.
He hamstrung him.
He cut the tendons in both hind legs. That poor horse couldn't budge an inch out of his tracks. Ben just stood there, real stony-like, looking at Stud. And then he shot him. Didn't say nothing more, just turned and walked away with that funny kind of look on his face.
All right, come on, Chester. Let's ride out to the Creed place before Ben does something he'll be sorry for. Here, Nancy.
Down to the catch pen. It ain't time to eat, so he's working.
Nancy, have you seen Ben Tolliver?
Sure did. He rode up here a few minutes ago, wanted to see Pa. I told him Pa was down to the corral. He just went down there.
Come on, Chester.
If you're going down to talk to Pa, I'll go with you. He goes down to the corral before sunup, and don't come back till time for dinner. What you want, Pa, for Marshall?
To keep him from getting killed, man.
Who's killed Pa? You don't think...
Come on, let's go.
Mr. Dillon, look. Out there in the middle of that catch pan.
All right, Tolliver. Hold it right where you are.
I ain't moving.
Now, give me your gun.
What for?
Just give it to me. All right, now you're under arrest, and this time you'll stay in jail.
Ben, why did you shoot my Pa?
I didn't, Nancy.
Well, then who did shoot him?
Nobody shot him, Marshal. I'm trying to tell you, Jake was already dead when I got here. It was the horse I shot.
What?
See for yourself.
Looks to me like Jake's horse got tangled up in the rope while they were working a Mustang. The horse got throwed, and Jake was trapped under him, and the Mustang drug them both. It killed Jake. His horse had two legs broke, so I shot him. That's what you heard.
Well, looks like you're telling the truth, then.
I am, Marshal.
Poor old Pa.
I always told Jake he shouldn't work wild horses alone. He ought to have somebody snub for him.
Pa always did have a mind of his own.
He sure did, that old devil.
You should be glad he did, Ben. It saved you from hanging.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The script was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns were by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear as Chester, Howard McNear as Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. George Walsh speaking. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That was a fine Western story. Once again, Matt Dillon saves the day. You're listening to the episode Ben Tolliver's Stud from the classic Western series Gunsmoke. The cast include William Conrad as Marshal Matt Dillon, Parley Bear as Chester Proudfoot, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. The episode was first broadcast on Sunday, February 7, 1954, at 6:30 p.m. on CBS. When the TV series debuted in 1955, the radio cast was only given a token edition, and CBS chose an entirely new cast for TV's Gunsmoke. Bill Conrad would later star in the TV series Cannon. An entire generation of Gunsmoke fans grew up never knowing that Cannon was the original Matt Dillon. I'm afraid it's almost time to say goodbye for another week. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. My email address is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com. My mailing address is Old Parlor Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFAS Studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.